Hi there, everybody. This is Armand Demel.
And this is Roberta Maria Atti.
With you at The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Warming up.
51 degrees.
51 degrees, in case you just tuned in.
The timing of our show is a little off, but we tried.
Well, we really did try, because what we were doing was we were noticing that people were having some severe psychological reactions to the sudden onslaught of cold weather. Onslaught, it came in, you know, like a lion.
You know,
is it going out like a lamb today?
You know why it was so surprising? Because everybody was so worried about global warming. And everybody was talking about how it's not getting cold, it's not getting cold, it's not getting cold, and then it hit us.
Yeah, like a, whoosh, ooh, like a brick.
It just caught us by surprise.
Well, you know, the things that were kind of interesting stuff that comes from it, because we did a little study of it going through the history of mankind.
80,000 years ago.
Right?
We started from.
We started with 80,000 years ago, and we got up to a day before yesterday.
Correct.
Blood, skin, shivers, shakes. Do you know some people are allergic to cold? And by allergic, it means that if the temperature drops suddenly, they can break out in hives and rashes, and it's a dangerous condition.
Sure.
And they could actually go into anaphylactic shock over cold, mm-hmm. not because they're cold, but because they're allergic to cold.
Hmm. Well, I guess it has to do with the release of histamine from the mast
That's
cells.
Right.
Amazing. Sure. Cold weather can do all kinds of things to the human body that are unexpected. Well, the expected reactions range from shivers, decreased circulation at
well,
the
why
periphery.
Why do people shiver?
Why do people shiver? Because the body, the innate intelligence of the body knows that if it causes itself to shiver, it will create some heat and it will keep itself warmer. Also, it will decrease evaporation, loss of moisture, and it will also decrease circulation in the muscles and at the periphery. And when you decrease circulation, Armand, you also decrease water content of the tissues, and that decreases the possibility of frozen tissues.
So there it
frostbite.
Is. There it is right there. Cold is dangerous, drops below 32 degrees, and it's dangerous because your blood could freeze in your body, just like your pipes do.
Well, we're made 70%, we are made of water.
So you could get, when you say I'm freezing, you could really freeze. So the body goes into a mechanism to say, oh, we're not going to let you freeze. The power of the biological imperative not to freeze is so solid, so strong, that it will take over your mind, it'll take over your will, it'll take over your wish.
Also, what the body does is it protects the center of itself. And
which is the heart and the pumping mechanism,
right?
Right?
All the organs, you know, the center of the body is where all of the vital stuff goes on. So what it will do is it will kind of try to shut down the openings on the skin and try to contract so that everything stays in. And one of the possible repercussions of that is that it will also constrict the bronchi and the breathing passages, and that's just the reaction. If you're in a warm place and you walk out and the difference in temperature is great, it could happen that your bronchi could constrict suddenly, and that's when people say, it took my breath away. Well, it does. It
takes my breath away.
It does.
Breathing has been involved, or breathing cold can increase the potential for blood pressure. Well, it actually drops the blood pressure. It raises the blood pressure.
Raises the blood pressure because there's a constriction of the capillaries at the periphery.
Increasing the odds of strokes or arthritis.
Of
heart attacks.
Heart attacks, right.
Right, arthritis is rough in cold weather, though. Oof.
Arthritis gets worse in cold weather, and also any kind of joint pain, rheumatism, any kind of inflammation gets worse.
Why
more
the inflammation? Wouldn't you imagine that the cold would make it a little more numb?
Well, it makes it numb when you are actually outside in the cold, but when you're inside and the weather outside is cold, you feel the aching more. You're more achy. You're more less lubricated, I guess. You know, less flexible, less pliable.
Armando Milbert, Roberta Maria Aki.
Dehydration.
Dehydration
is a big one.
Is a big danger in the winter, much more than the summer.
Yes. Yes. Well, because the body constricts the. Well, no, that it's okay. Let me start over. Because the loss of. Wait a minute. What did you ask me?
In dehydration, one of the things that happens is you forget to drink because you don't feel thirsty.
Right.
Yet your body is putting out a lot of perspiration because you're wearing layered clothing.
Well, also we urinate more in cold weather, a lot more, and so that can cause dehydration. But one is not aware of it.
And the dehydration again raises the blood pressure.
Right.
As well as doing other things. So people who are freezing, walking outside, are much more in danger of falling down and having a heart attack or a stroke.
It's dangerous stuff. Yes.
You know what they do up in Norway? In Norway, they keep clean garbage cans. Why do they keep garbage cans? Because the mayor
has been found in the garbage can.
Tell them about that, Roberta.
Well, what happens is that in Northern Europe, it can get really cold. So one of the things that they teach you early on in life is that if you get drunk or if for whatever reason you are about to fall asleep and you're far from home, you should look for a trash can and you should put yourself in it because that will keep you warm and alive, hopefully, through the night. So it has happened that people like the mayor of a town was found in the morning in a trash can and other illustrious citizens and, covered in garbage.
Gee, I got a couple of politicians I'd like to find.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
I don't mean to be beating around the bush. All right, but if you're freezing, if you're really cold and you're out there, number one, you're in danger. And this is an important thing. Cold is dangerous. Now, cold is dangerous especially to people who are not used to cold and especially people who have a heritage of living in warmer climates.
Very true, Armand. Very true. And also, it's dangerous because cold makes people fall asleep. Mm-hmm. So it's not a painful death, but it can be lethal. It makes people, it slows down all of your life functions, the heart rate, the breathing rate. It slows down metabolism. It slows down until everything comes to a halt. But it's a kind of a falling asleep. So it's very dangerous. Yes.
You know, when you heat becomes such a valuable commodity in cold weather, we take heat for granted. I remember once I reserved a hotel room, and I remember this place, and I said, could you mind turning up the heat before I get there? And they said, oh, you're from New York. And I said, yes, I'm from New York. And they said, because you guys are used to a lot of heat. You see, if you live in an apartment in Manhattan, you heat the whole apartment so that you stay warm.
Mm-hmm.
When you live in a home, sometimes you can't afford to heat the whole home. So what you do is wear layers on your body, and you don't heat the home. You heat an area of the home, like with a little furnace. And so heat becomes such a commodity. Heat is such a commodity that when you think about a romantic evening with people, heat has a lot to do with it.
Sure. In fact, it's kind of a stereotype that if a man wants to entice a young woman, he brings her things that are symbolic of heat, like flowers.
How are flowers symbolic
can't
of
live
heat?
In
because
cold.
They can't live in cold, right?
Sugar, which is a food that brings heat to the body, immediate heat. You eat a piece of chocolate,
candy, a piece of chocolate,
feel warm. And also, a man usually historically is not supposed to admit that he is cold, and he's supposed to take off his jacket and offer it to the young lady if she's a little bit cold, in spite of the fact that he himself may be shivering, but it's just not manly to admit that. So there's a whole dynamic about heat and romance the man is supposed to provide the woman with heat.
He brings the heat. Wine is a form of heat.
Sure.
That you bring, you know, and food, of course.
And food, yes.
You bring something to nibble on, it becomes all fuel. And this idea of gifting fuel becomes, in before our day, a bag of coals was a gift mm-hmm. to some homes.
A chunk of wood to burn in a fireplace.
Yeah, a chunk of wood to burn in a fireplace.
Right.
Which we take for granted.
Yeah.
Armand de Mille, Roberta Mariotti, we're going to go much further into this
because
it brings us to our heritage.
Armand, do you know that in places, I've been in India and in Nepal, places where the wood is scarce, so they don't have fuel to burn, and it gets very cold. You know what they use? Cow dung. They take the cow dung and dry it in circles. They make a patty out of it, dry it up, and that's what they use for fuel. That tells you how important heat is. But I mean, that's amazing. They really figured out a way to extract heat in an ecologically sound way, don't you think?
It's interesting. You know, Roberta, how would you account for the fact that people who live in northern climates, Norway, Sweden, Greenland, tend to be more depressed than people who live in southern climates?
It seems
Do you think it's related to the cold?
Sure it is. It seems that in cold weather, serotonin levels drop. In fact, that's what SAD is related to, seasonal affective disorder is called. And also, the drop in serotonin levels, which could be related to the less amount of light, sunlight, but it's also related to the cold itself, to the temperature. Because of the lower serotonin levels, there's a tendency to overeat and a tendency to not be able to sleep very well, to sleep in what's the word, fits and starts, mm-hmm. something like that. So the serotonin, so people will eat more in cold weather.
And people tend to gain weight in cold weather because they burn off less, they have less exercise, they eat more to try to consume more fuel.
And there is the switch over to what we call the polar bear metabolism, which is a metabolism of conserving resources in the form of fat, so that everything that the person eats, instead of being consumed for energy, it is stored as fat. And and that's what polar bears do. But they hibernate, you see. They go to sleep for 3 or 4 months.
In our research to try to find some of the other facts about heat, I found some military manuals. And in the military manuals, they cautioned against having your soldiers be in cold weather cold. To the point where they said it is very likely that a soldier will forget all commitment that he has if he has to face cold weather.
So it's really biologically
ingrained in us.
It's
ingrained that you should not die from cold. You should do anything else. So they found that you could torture a soldier, and he would be less likely to betray his position and his dedication. But if he gets cold, he most likely will abandon whatever his belief system is. And this was proven in Russia when the Germans invaded Russia, or when Napoleon went into Russia.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't prepared for that level of cold. Now, both the Germans are used to cold weather, and the French are used to some cold weather, but when they went into Mother Russia...
Yeah, not that kind.
The
of cold.
Mother of cold, you
yeah.
know what I mean? Cold
yeah.
mama. She got them, and not only did she get them because there was no food and because it was sludge, but the spirit, the drop in serotonin, the depression, and the loss of will that happened to these soldiers, they couldn't fight. They had to turn around.
It took thousands of years for people to learn to adapt to cold weather. It took a long, long time, and cold weather made people very, very tough. In fact, we could say that most of the human aggression, the human violent behavior that we see, all the way from domestic violence, child abuse, all the way to wars and weaponry, is associated with cold weather. So you know, if someone who is not used to cold weather suddenly finds him or herself in a temperature that they're not adapted to, that they're not genetically programmed to withstand and to survive, this person is going to wither away. Or shiver away.
Armand DeMille, Roberta Moriarty. Now, let's talk about the Caucasians and the Neanderthals.
Sure. Okay, well...
80,000 years ago?
80,000 years ago was the start of the last ice age. And what we found is that with the ice age came a challenge that up until that point, humanoids... hominids, humans, people, Neanderthals had not yet faced. They had mastered some weaponry, some, you know, way of surviving with hunting and gathering, but not cold. So with the Ice Age came the challenge of figuring out how to live where there's nothing to eat, where, you know, it's cold and you need pelt, you need shelter, you need fire, you need all kinds of things that you don't need in the warm weather. Also, there's an interesting psychological aspect that Armand and I were discussing, and it's this, that humans are really the only animals that express their territoriality not just in space, but in time. And territoriality is where most of the aggressive behavior shows up.
Well, wait, before you go there, let's look at territoriality of time. Meaning, if territoriality of space means I own this place.
And I own everything in it.
And I own everything in it, and everybody in it, and everybody in it is part of me. Territoriality of time, a very interesting concept, Roberta, means that I own the future.
Correct.
How can I own the future?
Ah, only humans have that concept. You see, because we all have to face death, but animals, even though they must know about dying and death, but they don't think about it, so they don't worry about what happens after they die. But we do. We humans have a concept of immortality and whatnot, in the sense that our genetic immortality is what we care about. So humans want their offsprings and their descendants to live into the future as if that was a kind of certainty that a part of the self continues on, a part of the self does not die. So that's a territoriality that expresses itself in time instead of space.
And the interesting thing about time territoriality is that it grew kind of in the cold weather.
Exactly.
See, people in cold climates are far more violent
mm-hmm.
than people in southern climates. And it is this very violence. And why it becomes violent? Look, if you're out in the country and you're walking around and you see some birds and you see some trees, you can pick up fruit off a tree, life is pretty good. You wake up in the Caribbean, hungry, you'll find something to eat.
No, you look up and you see mangoes on the trees.
You wake up in Siberia, hungry. You look up and you see your uncle. I guess I'll have his leg.
Yes, well, also, you know, territoriality is really a predominantly masculine behavior. And when you think about the ownership of the future, it's we're also looking at the fact that most males, human males, want to make sure that it's their offspring that makes it into the future. So there is a possessiveness of you know, of the territory in time. Now, the aggression, the normal biological aggression that males exhibit in protecting their space, is now applied to time. And in warm weather, you know, aggression and violence, Armand, is easily displaced or diffused because there are so many activities where that can be sublimated or expressed in ways other than attack. But when it's cold and people are confined inside a cave or a dwelling, and there's no way to go outside and interact with nature, there's no way to do something physical that would dispel that energy, testosterone builds up, and this aggression, instead of displacing itself onto some, you know, ritualistic behavior, it becomes expressed by making war against one's neighbor or against a neighboring village. So it's historically true that the colder the weather, the more aggressive the people, the more violent, the more barbaric, the more cruel, sadistic, also the more, can I say this, the more sexist, in the sense that women are most oppressed in times when the weather is the coldest and in places where the weather is the coldest.
But Roberta, you're saying most of the cold weather people were Caucasians.
Well,
and the Neanderthal and those traveling up from Africa, which did not come from cold weather, were not Caucasian. Are you saying that whites are more violent than blacks?
Do I need to say that, Armand? I think it's pretty obvious that the most aggressive people are the descendants of the northern people. I don't want to say the northern people. I'm not labeling anyone. I'm not saying any particular group of people. But certainly the people who came from the north to the south, all over the globe, would come down with weapons, with the intention of taking on slaves, with the intention of killing and raping and stealing and conquering and colonizing and taking over. So their aggression was directed against other people, as opposed to, well, the normal kind of aggression would be displaced in activities like hunting, like playing games, like challenging, you know, maybe games of competition. So those are normal human ways of expressing aggression. When those are not possible, or when the weather is really, really, really cold, it seems that people become very aggressive and violent and tend to want to conquer those who live in the warmer climates, and they want to take over the resources of those who live in the warmer climates.
Because they want the resources because they want to own time.
Yes, they want to
own... See, this all starts off with an ice cube. You know, it all starts off with being cold. And then what do you want to own of the people who have these resources? You want to own their fuel.
Sure.
You know, nowadays we have a war over fuel, over heat.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to own the heat?
And you know, Armand, I really do believe, when I think about it, that even when the war is about oil and fuel and resources, ultimately it's still about time territoriality, because it's still
sure.
about my children having more than your children, and therefore a part of me living in the future as opposed to a part of you. You see?
One of the things I was talking to yesterday, I was talking to Sonny Rollins before the radio program, in case you hadn't heard it. We did an interview with Sonny Rollins, a famous jazz legend. And you could get that on by going to our archives at thepositivemind.com and listen to that interview. It was an excellent one. But he's very concerned about global warming. And he's very concerned about the violence that people tend to put on each other in the just very design of their lives of trying to conserve and steal the basic elements of life.
Sure.
As opposed to living them, you know.
But you see, Armand, let's look for a moment about what it must be like for people like the Neanderthals, who are used to waking up in an environment where there is enough to eat and competition is necessary up to a point. But when you're dealing with a climate like Siberia, competition is probably seems necessary because the resources are so apparently so scarce and the life itself is so hard that I think it fosters this sense of I must fight my way, you know, into the future. I must fight my way through this. And then the other thing is when you're surrounded by the jungle where everything is alive, you hear all kinds of animals calls and you see all kinds of fruit and flowers and trees and life is everywhere. Well, you're kind of surrounded by life. But if you wake up in the morning and you're surrounded by ice and gray skies, wouldn't that bring you psychologically face to face with death?
And people don't like to face death very much, I tell you. But there are, as you know, two hotels in this world that are built of ice.
I didn't know.
Every Wednesday, they have one in Toronto, I think, or in Quebec. And one in Norway. Everything is made of ice. The bar is made of ice. The beds are made of ice. Everything is made. They wait for a deep freeze.
I didn't know.
Absolutely. And you could go up there. And there are rules about how long you're allowed to be in the bar, for example. How many minutes you're allowed to stay there. But everything is freezing.
Wow.
Everything is frozen. And you and they just pour water in a certain structure and they make hotel rooms out of it.
That's amazing.
Ice castles. People would go there. Just as there are people who go swimming at this time of year. You know, they go jumping in the ocean. Now, what is it that gives you the shock of this hypothermia?
Well, both. Hyper and hypo.
You know, when you want to lose, if you jump in the water, you lose the energy of your body. You lose the heat of your body 6 times faster than you do in air.
Well, but the idea is that you first really get hot in the sauna. You get very hot first. That's how they do it. I think this originates in Northern Europe, this custom, and they get hot. They get really, really hot, and then they jump in
plunge into ice cubes.
In the ice cube, right. And the idea is that the heat draws out toxins, of course, draws the toxins to the surface. And then when you, and you release them through sweat, and then when you jump into the cold water, you kind of give yourself a super stimulation to your cardiovascular system, and if you are healthy, it's a very stimulating thing. It kind of gives you a tune up, but I don't recommend it unless people are in really good shape.
It's the Polar Bear Club.
Not a good idea unless the person is very healthy.
This is Armand DeMille, Roberta Mariotti. We're talking about the cold weather, and we're talking about how cold affects you and some of the historical meaning of cold. You know, religion was formed around cold, and we're going to talk about that when we get back from our break. We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes, my friends. We'll be right back. Fever. Fever. And this is Armand DeVille with Roberta Maria Atti. Yes, you give me fever. Quite a thing to say to somebody, you know. Now, if you think about it, and we think about how bad cold is to people, fever is wonderful. I mean, think about dance. Right. Dance generates heat.
Right.
You know, and dance is something that you're going to find is one of the great solutions that people have to getting cold.
Mm-hmm. Well, sure. Movement. Movement creates heat. So also, people have a tendency to associate emotional states with a particular level of heat or the lack thereof. You know, like we say that someone is emotionally cold when they don't show reactivity, when they're not emotionally involved or responsive, and vice versa. There seems to be a lot of cold and heat related to how a person is or reacts emotionally.
You're a cold-hearted person.
Right.
Cold-hearted person means that you're a person who doesn't have many emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Cold as a fish.
or you know, when someone is hot, that's the opposite.
That's another way you look at somebody. If you look at somebody and say, oh, he's hot.
Right.
Well, let's talk about being in heat.
Okay.
For a minute. You know, now we talk about female animals, right, are in heat. What does it mean for an animal to be in heat?
It means that animal is ovulating and therefore the animal is fertile. And that's actually one of the ways in which a woman can use the thermometer as a contraceptive measure. By taking one's temperature every day, a woman can learn to chart her ovulatory rhythms so that she can tell the difference.
How hot do you get? I mean, what's the high temperature?
I'm not sure. I think it's a difference of maybe 1 degree, but still, that's a big difference in terms of body temperature.
When your eggs are cooking 1 degree higher,
right,
than they normally do, they are
exactly
ready to pop.
I don't know if it's exactly.
God. Did I actually say it that way?
I think you did, but I nonchalantly just
passed away.
Passed on. I think that it's about 1 degree, or you know, it's a small leap, but still it's significant enough that you know that day you're ovulating. And actually, if women are in tune with their bodies, they don't even need the thermometer. They can feel it. They can sense it. There's a very different feel.
Do they have a greater desire to have sex at
they
that
do.
Time?
They do.
They're driven. So when we talk about animals being in heat,
biologically,
we mean biologically, people are in heat too.
Biologically speaking, that means that the hormonal levels are favorable to conception.
And if the hormonal levels are favorable to conception, then the person's behavior is favorable to conception, meaning they want to have sex.
Right.
And they put out energy and pheromones that say, I'm ready.
Yes.
I'm warm.
And if people follow the rhythms of the seasons, at least in the northern hemisphere, they generally have the height of sexual activity in the fall when it starts to cool down, when it's not too hot and not too cold. And then women have a pregnancy through the winter, and the babies are born in the spring.
Why would you want to have pregnancy in the winter?
For a number of reasons. Number one, the pregnancy occurs at a time when the woman is less active, so there's less of a chance of injury, less of a chance of being bitten by a snake or, you know, being attacked by an animal if you go outside. And also during the winter, people rest more, so that's ideal for the baby. Also, babies who are born in the spring of course, they face the summer as the first season. So the warm weather is more, it makes it easier for the baby to survive. I mean, a baby who was born in December has more of a challenge than a baby who was born in April, March,
so it,
April.
So it makes sense to carry the baby during the cold period of time.
Yeah.
And therefore, to have your ovulation peak.
The fall.
In the fall, and then you see, you get your peak day during the fall. So, like we know, October 16th is probably the best.
At 2 o'clock.
At 2 o'clock is the best time to score. Okay, now men, you know, you look at a man, and a man is, if a man looks very sexy, women will say he looks hot.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that heat goes along with masculine sexual energy as well?
Well, there's a way to look at men as hot, and also I think that there's the opposite, that some women are attracted to the cold, unemotional or emotionally distant, you know, male with with the coolness. Oh, he's cool, you know. So I think that both can be attractive, but I think what's interesting is that we definitely relate emotional states to the temperature of the body or of the situation.
Well, the other interesting thing is that the manifestation of emotions, or the overt manifestation of emotions, is usually connected to a perception of lower intelligence. In other words, when a person is not in control of their emotions, that is usually perceived as a lesser intelligent person. And therefore, cold is once again going up to the northern people, you know, who are saying we are in control of our emotions, like the Brits, you know, and the Norwegians and the Germans, who the higher up you get. Although
well,
it's not true of the Russians, is it?
In this cold.
The Russians aren't cold.
But,
they're pretty warm.
They're a different kind of cold.
A different kind of.
Yeah, because there's rage. Rage is a high emotion, is a strong emotion, but it can be very cold. Yes, in this culture, the culture that comes out, you know, Armand, the people in power on Earth today are really the descendants of those who survived the Ice Age. And so everything that we believe about what's powerful, what's intelligent, what's desirable, has to do with the perception of who's in charge and who has the dough, who has control over land, money, and power.
And the future.
And the future. So this is interesting, because in reality, what we know now about world population is that this strategy of the northern Huns, or whatever they are, Vikings, the Vandals, I don't know what the name is, but that did not work at all. Because it turns out that actually the people who are now in power are not reproducing anymore, or they're having 1.5 babies per couple. And in fact, the people that they look down on and they colonize and exploit are reproducing at such a higher rate that pretty soon, guess what? The genetic ownership of the future strategy is going to go kaput for those who employed it so diligently. It didn't work, and that's the irony of these things. That you
did
know.
You say kaput tongue in cheek? I mean, did you choose that?
No, it just
because came. Of the German model of trying to race.
No,
you
didn't. It just came like that.
Wasn't a Nazi reference.
Well, maybe subconsciously, but it really just seemed the right word, because it's quite an irony that all of this big to-do, trying to control the future, the territoriality over time, really was a self-defeating proposition completely. It's a total disaster for those who applied it.
You know, it used to be that. When I think about, and I hate to get on the political bandwagon too far, but when I think about our current politic, we're no longer concerned about the future. We're concerned about the now and the immediate future, but not the children. Like, who's going to pay for the war?
Yes.
We don't care about that. Who's going to, what are our children going to inherit? What's the legacy?
And how intelligent
they're going
is
to
that?
Have it. And how intelligent have we, you know? Yeah. I mean, we finally may have gotten a president with a frozen brain.
But you see, Armand, that really tells us, if one is so disturbed, and I'm using a kind word here, that one does not care about one's descendants, about one's genetic line, about one's, you know, immortality, I guess, well, then maybe that genetic line is designed to self-destruct.
Obviously, and, you know, it's going back to a very primitive way. It's going back to the primitive, we don't consider the future.
Mm-hmm.
Because the future became part of, we came as an endowment with religion, mm-hmm. with the concept of religion, with many things that they were born, you know, will own the future.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, it's will own the now.
Right.
That was first, and that was the first Caucasian dominant dream. Let's mm-hmm. own the now and all the resources now, and then let's take over the future while we're at it.
Right. And since we have nothing better to do because it's too cold to go out and play, so let's kill our neighbors instead. My goodness, you know, of course it's not going to work. And perhaps we are reverting to a pre-Ice Age culture of, you know, I don't know. I think that we're realizing that many of these behaviors of displaced aggression that come with cold weather could be looked at as an aberration and as a lesson for those who are going to be alive in the future, that that's absolutely not the best way to colonize it.
You know, if you think about the lucky ones, think about the ones who have kept, who are able to maintain their heat and hold their heat. For example, nature designed snakes to be able to hold on to their heat by generating their heat in a very subtle kind of way. And they have, it's the whole idea of being able to hold on to what you have. Many people find themselves obsessively trying to protect what they have.
Mm.
As if they're saying, my heat is always very fragile.
Mm-hmm.
And I could lose it at any point. And I have to hold on to what I have. I have to hold on, holding on desperately.
Mm.
Part of what Sonny Rollins was saying about global warming. In our attempt to hold on, we discard so much junk and dirt, and we forget about the future completely.
Yeah, so maybe the cold made us a little nutty. It gave us a few millennia of odd behavior. But, you know, hopefully we learned our lesson.
Well, let's think about the good side of it. With this cold wave that came in over the past few days, after being such a spring-like weather we had, you know, where cold didn't come, and then cold kind of comes sweeping in, people gathered in a different kind of way. People responded to each other in a different way. When you have a common oppressor, mm-hmm. you know, like cold, you connect with people.
Sure.
You know, you tend to stay more at home.
Mm-hmm.
You tend to make more love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you tend to have more affection. You tend to be more, I mean, the whole idea of Christmas and the whole concept of a Christmas being in the middle of the cold and it's got to snow for Christmas.
And, you know, one of the best memories I have is being in Oklahoma with Sydney in an ice storm, stuck in the middle of it, not having a place to go, and snuggling up against Sydney and him being...
Sydney was her giant...
The polar
white
bear.
...dog that she had. That was as big as a polar bear.
And him and I in this ice storm, and I looked at him and I knew he was... If I hadn't had him, I would have been in trouble. But that moment was so magical, Armand, where I had this beast impervious to the cold. He didn't care. He was covered in ice, and it looked like he was lying on the beach. And there I was, shivering and snuggling against him, and I'll never forget that moment of smelling this bear smell of Sydney and thinking, my goodness, thank God I have this dog. So some of the most magical moments, actually, in our lives are related to cold, or the first snow. My neighbor, the Brazilian lady, I'll never forget the first time she saw the snow. She was like a child. She was so happy.
Look at that.
Yeah, she was so happy.
Well, you know, also, Roberta, you know, if a creativity is has a lot of its birthplace in a lot of the most creative things that we've ever seen happened in the cold.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's where, you know, where dance and art. In fact, tomorrow we're having on air, we're having a friend, Patricia Miranda, is going to be with us, and she's going to be teaching us about working with egg tempera as a way of unleashing your own creative stuff alone. Because, you see, creativity is a relationship with yourself in an alone space, and the cold kind of moves you towards that direction.
And that's the see, it's not all bad news with cold weather.
It's not bad at all. You have sex, you have love, you have babies, you have food,
big dogs.
Pizza being delivered.
But one of the best things that happen is that truly the beginning of life seems to happen in the coldest, darkest places and moments. And so when it's the coldest day of the year, it's where people are most creative. It could be where people are almost most violent, but let's not look at that right now.
Well,
let's
you got
look
both.
At the fact
you
that
have creativity
people
and
creative.
You have violence, and I'd be willing to bet that right. The creative ones are not the violent ones.
Right.
Different weapons.
Yes. Very different ways of dealing with a challenge. Yes.
And so one of the things that you could use during that period of time is to try to see what you could do with your creative juices, which are flowing.
Mm-hmm.
Very available during a cold period of time.
Yes, in fact, the darkest days of the winter are the days where we could easily reach the deepest depth of our unconscious, where the greatest creativity is. And I bet that people like Mozart and Beethoven and all of the great artists, Van Gogh, I bet that when they were the most uncomfortable in the cold weather that they lived in, and the loneliness of their lives, that's when they were the most creative. So it's true, big challenge, big creativity.
And it's 51 degrees.
So, okay, forgive us, our timing was off, but
we had it planned.
We planned
in the cold weather.
And we went ahead anyway.
And this will be saved for the future. You know, I want to tell you one more thing.
Because it's going to get cold again.
To all my friends out there. Have you been making phone calls lately and you get something like the telephone company on the line who takes 45 minutes to straighten out a little problem you have?
Oh, my goodness.
Like while your phone rings 10 times instead of picking up the thing. And then at the end of this conversation, when you finally get it straightened out, or you call your cable company and, you know, and you have this person on the other side of the line who says this mandatory thing. They say to you, and is there anything else I can do for you?
It's true.
Right? Is there anything else I could do for you? I mean, when you think about what you just went through to get done what is done, which is fine, and the collaboration. Well, I've started doing something. And I started saying, just for kicks, well, yeah, can you send over a pizza? Now, this may... Something happens when you do that. The person on the other side of the line becomes so amazingly human.
Uh-huh.
And they laugh. Mm-hmm. And they say, oh, I wish I could. And I say, it would be nice to have one right now, wouldn't it? And they say, yeah, it would be wonderful to have one. And you humanize the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And we have opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to humanize and warm the cold experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And we just have to do it a little bit from our hearts.
Mm-hmm.
So let me make a recommendation to you that you try something. When people are saying, this, can I do anything else for you? Try saying to them, can you send me a pizza? And they'll say, oh, do you listen to The Positive Mind?
What a great idea.
This is Armand DeMille, Roberta Maria Atti. Roberta, thank you very much for this research. We're going to come back and we're going to do another program on heat. I want to do one on the sun. I want to do a program about the sun and our relationship to the sun.
Oh, that's going to be a nice
You know, I mean, there's a whole psychological relationship we have with the sun that we do not pay attention to.
Great. And maybe one on the moon.
And on the moon, of course. This is Armand Amelie. If you wanted to get a copy of today's program, you could get it online, of course, at WBAI.org. Or you could listen to thepositivemind.org or Roberta's website.
www.creativehealthsolutions.org.
And if you missed it yesterday, my friends, don't forget. Go back and listen to that wonderful interview with Sonny Rollins yesterday. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. Bye-bye for now.